Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, June 21, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. In local news headlines, local judge and applicant for Iowa Supreme Court vacancy. A local judge is an applicant for a vacancy on the Iowa Supreme Court. Iowa District Judge Alan Heavens is among five applicants to fill a vacancy when Justice Brent Apple retires on July 13th, according to a press release. Other applicants are Judges Patrick Tott and David May, and attorneys Timothy Garten and William Miller. The applicants will be interviewed by the State Judicial Nominating Commission on Monday, June 27th. The commission will select three finalists and forward those names to Governor Kim Reynolds. The governor will then have 30 days to appoint the new justice. Heavens of Garnavillo, Iowa, was appointed to the bench by Reynolds in February 2019. He was elected as Clayton County Attorney in 2010 and served in that capacity until he was appointed as a judge. Apple is a Dubuque native who was appointed to the Supreme Court in 2006. Public comments on the applicants will be accepted through Thursday, June 23rd, and may be emailed to sjnc@iowa.gov. Northwest Illinois Realtor Association merges with two other area groups. A local association of realtors has joined two other area associations. The Realtor Association of Northwestern Illinois, covering Joe Davis, Carroll, and Stevenson counties, joined Rockford Area Realtors and Belvedere Board of Realtors to form Northwest Illinois Alliance of Realtors, according to a press release. The new association represents $1.16 billion in home sales annually and covers six counties: Boone, Winnebago, Ogle, Stevenson, Joe Davis, and Carroll. Manchester Council considers allowing alcohol in city parks. Story by Dylan Kurt, Manchester Press. Manchester, Iowa. A measure that would allow Manchester eventgoers to enjoy alcoholic beverages within select city parks cleared its first big hurdle and possibly could be passed in time for the next Music on the Maquoketa event Thursday, July 7th. Given how well-attended Manchester's park system has become and the plethora of community events hosted in them throughout the year, the council has held several discussions at the committee level on changing its current ordinance regarding alcohol consumption in order to allow a different kind of experience. However, overconsumption of alcohol would still be prohibited. This does not allow someone to be intoxicated in the park. That is still against the law, City Manager Tim Vick said. If someone is down there having a beer while they're listening to music or watching the Whitewater Park, that is allowed. The proposed ordinance allow changes also make clear that while alcohol would be allowed in most city parks, it would still would be prohibited to consume alcohol in any other public place unless the premises is covered by a liquor control license, wine, or beer permit. The ordinance also explicitly excludes alcohol consumption at the Kramer Aquatic Center, Beckman Sports Complex, or on any public school property, or while attending any public or private school-related function. Vick did note that the bleachers in Tyrrell Park are not considered to be part of the Aquatic Center. Kegs are prohibited, and Vick stressed several times that glass bottles are not allowed either. Additionally, the ordinance states that no person shall bring on the premises of any city-owned park or park facility within the city for the purpose of sale of any alcoholic beverages, including beer. The prohibition does not apply to a community event sponsored by a civic nonprofit organization acting under the terms of a permit. Council member Dean Sherman said his only concern was making sure this ordinance would be enforceable and not too much of an additional burden on the police department. But he ultimately believed that people will be responsible if given the opportunity. I think it's a move in the right direction. People are going to rise to your expectations, Sherman said. If we expect them to go out and get drunk, they probably will. But if we expect them to be responsible and give them freedom to exercise good judgment, I think they will respond accordingly. City Attorney Jim Peters said that what is being proposed is within the scope of what several other municipalities allow, and also reminded the council that if it finds these new rules are being abused, they can always be revoked. With the council unanimously passing first reading of the ordinance change, it is likely the second and third reading would be passed at its June 27th meeting, unless there are any major objections from the public. Dubuque County Well Testing Program doubles participation in 1 year. Story by Benjamin Fisher at thmedia.com. Dubuque County Health Department staff are seeing a significant increase in residents using a state-funded program for free private well testing after years of low participation. For the fiscal year that ends June 30th, department staff were able to test more than double the wells they did in the previous year and spent all the money they received from the state of Iowa through its Grants to Counties program. Just a year ago, staff said they were not able to use all the money they received through the program and were not testing as many residents' wells as they could. Staff attributed their success to a motivated marketing program using direct contacts and local newspapers. The state gave the county health department $40,400 for the program in the current fiscal year. Health department environmental specialist Bailey Evernarius said the department spent all of that within a month to spare. "We spent the whole $40,400 with a total of 244 water tests, one plugging of a well, one well closure, and one reconstruction," she told the Dubuque County Board of Health at a recent meeting. Through the program, the county tests private wells for coliform, bacteria, E. coli, nitrates, arsenic, and manganese, and provides some funding for shocking water well closures and reconstructions to mitigate any issues. The 244 tests were far above the 114 conducted through the program in fiscal year 2021. Just 5 tests were conducted in fiscal year 2020, 4 in fiscal year 2019, and none in fiscal year 2018, though the program was first offered. One concern landowners previously shared with department staff was a misconception that their participation in the program would require them to address their water well contamination. This is not a requirement of the program. Instead, staff share testing results with landowners and offer guidance on options moving forward. Health Department Interim Executive Director Samantha Clough said a July 2021 story in the Telegraph Herald explaining that aspect of the program led to the department receiving many calls for testing. "The story that the TH did last year really jump-started things," she said. Avenarius then put recurring ads in local newspapers and more calls came in. She also sent to landowners letters to landowners the department knew had private wells and those who previously had their wells tested. From there, information about the program spread by word of mouth. "We've had a lot of neighbors calling in saying that their neighbors had their well tested, so they wanted to know if they could," Avernarius said. The tests found contamination in many of the wells. Of the 244 tests, 50 came back positive for coliform bacteria, Clough said. Tests also found 21 instances of high nitrate levels, 10 with E. coli presence, and 1 with high arsenic levels. Tests were performed in most communities within the county, something staff intended to track further in the future. "We did not test in Luxembourg or Cascade, but going forward, we will make sure we do in those two cities," Evernarius said. The department has set up tracking systems to look at types of contaminants found in wells and the zip codes in which wells are tested. "Those are things that weren't set up before," Clough said. "That's going to help us a lot testing in the future and help us plan for what type of Dubuque County residents we want to provide the free testing to." As of June 15th, Evernarius said the program had a waiting list of 37 wells after using all of the grants resources. "Because the department spent its allotted sum of money, it will receive more from the state next year. We will be getting $50,505 this coming year," Evernarius said. "We've started that application, which is due June 30th. With that increased amount, Clough said the department should be able to test 300 private wells in the next fiscal year, depending how many closures or reconstructions are requested. Clough said the next step would be finding funding for more mitigation of wells when staff members find contamination. Dubuque County Supervisor Ann McDonough, who is her board's liaison to the Board of Health, voiced tentative support for that idea during the Board of Health's meeting. "If there is a need and there are citizens requesting, I'd like to see you consider as a board next step," she said. "Perhaps there should be additional funding from the county. Completing the grant, to me, is the baseline." Here's some biz buzz news. Dubuque dentist practice to move. Women's Fitness Center coming to Piazza. Local goods store changing Bellevue locations. Story by Kaylee Reese at thmedia.com. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from across the tri-states. In this edition, we highlight developments in Dubuque, Piasta, and Bellevue, Iowa. A Dubuque dental practice soon will move to a new location to accommodate more patients and employees. Oatkin Family Dentistry will move to 1082 Cedar Cross Road on July 25th, according to practice owner Ryan Oatkin. The space, which was built in 2018, previously housed a dental practice run by James Feely of Dubuque Dental Associations. The location is completely built out with brand new equipment, Oatkin said. It's absolutely beautiful. As a practice, we've been growing both patients and team members. We're currently running out of space for our technology. The move allows us to be in an updated space, and it positions our practice for the future. Oatkin Family Dentistry currently is located at 2095 John F. Kennedy Road in a facility built in 1971. Oatkin, who started practicing in the location in 2018, said there have been five dentists that he knows of who have operated out of the JFK property. This would be the first time that there's not a dentist in that location, he said. We are looking to sublease for the next year. The new Cedar Cross Road location will offer double the space to see patients, Oatkin said. The new property has 8 operatories, while the current location has 4. The new building also has more space for equipment for 3D imaging and digital impressions. Oatkin said the practice has grown from 3 to 5 employees since he started in 2018. With more space in a new location, he hopes to hire 2 more employees in the future. The practice will continue operating at its current location until July 13th, Oatkin said. Staff will then prepare for the new location's opening on July 25th. The team is really excited for the new updated space, Oatkin said. With COVID, we had to reconfigure our entire location. The new practice is already set up and ready to go. Oatkin Family Dentistry is open from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Wednesday and from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Thursday. The office can be reached at 563-557-1111. Women's Fitness Center coming to Piasta. A Women's Fitness Center will come to Piasta next year. Owner Erica Hermson said she hopes to open a physical location for Sweat Inspire Sisterhood by summer 2023. The fitness center will be located at the intersection of Thunder Valley Drive and Cox Springs Road near Darkbird Tap House. I'm from Farley, Iowa, said Hermson, who currently lives in Olathe, Kansas. I knew I eventually wanted to do something for my community. We were back around there Christmas, and I took a look at Piasta, and I said, let's go for it. Hermson started Sweat Inspire Sisterhood online 7 years ago, and members take workout classes virtually. She said she saw a need for this sort of business as a way for adult women to connect and make friends. Sweat Inspire Sisterhood now offers more than 2,000 workouts online, including yoga, kickboxing, and treadmill workouts, she said. The Piasta Center will be the first physical location for Sweat Inspired Sisterhood, Hermson said. The building will include 2 classrooms for high-intensity interval training, strength, and hot yoga classes. All classes will still be available virtually. I love the community aspect of it, Hermson said. People start as complete strangers, and then they're saying hi to each other in the grocery store. More information on Sweat Inspire Sisterhood can be found at sweatinspiresisterhood.com. Local goods store to change locations in Bellevue. A Bellevue, Iowa store selling goods is changing locations in the community. More local, currently at 305 South Riverview Street, will move to 100 North Riverview Street on July 1. The new location previously housed Country Cupboard. We've really enjoyed our integration into the Bellevue community, owner Heather Moore said, but the space we're in right now is just too small for us. I feel like the new building will allow us to expand the products that we offer and do even more for the Bellevue community. Moore said the business, then known as Moore Family Farm, started in 2017, and a more local location opened in Maquoketa, Iowa. The business focuses on selling products such as meat and eggs from Iowa and the Midwest, as well as the Moore family farm near Maquoketa. Both the Maquoketa and Bellevue locations also sell coffee, and Moore said the business has started making fresh cheese at the Maquoketa location. The current Moore local location in Bellevue opened in April 2021, but Moore said she always has had an eye on the business soon to be home. "I always loved the building we're moving into," she said. It's so cool. I told my husband, if I ever open up a new location, I want it to be in this building. The new building is about twice the size of the current 500-square-foot one and will allow for more shelving, retail space, and seating in the coffee shop area. Now with some more space, we can bring up more fresh meat, Moore said. Once we start selling cheese, we'll have more of that to fill the shelves. We're ready to serve the Bellevue community. Moore's local Bellevue location is open from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, and 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday. The business can be found online at shopmorelocal.com. Darlington leaders seek FEMA funding for community safe room. Darlington, Wisconsin. City of Darlington and Darlington community school leaders are seeking federal money to pay for a community safe room to use during inclement weather. City and school leaders, in conjunction with Wisconsin Emergency Management, applied for hazard mitigation assistance funds from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to cover construction costs. If the request is approved, the city would use the money to build multi-purpose community safe room. The room would protect 1,866 residents and students in the event of severe weather, according to an online announcement from the Darlington Police Department. City and school district officials ask anyone with feedback or comments on the project to email them to FEMA-R5-environmental@fema.dhs.gov or send them by mail to Dwayne Castaldi, Regional Environmental Officer, FEMA Region 5, 536 South Clark Street, 6th floor, Chicago, Illinois, 60605. Two free guided hikes to be held at Dubuque County Parks. Dubuque County Library District and Dubuque County Conservation will hold free guided hikes at two parks. A hike at New Wine Park will be held at 11 a.m. on Monday, June 27th. A hike at Bankson Park will be held at 10 a.m. on July 1. Registration is required for both hikes and is available at bit.ly/3myzdqg Carnegie Stout to hold live concert with Dubuque musician. Carnegie Stout Public Library, 360 West 11th Street, will host a solo performance by Dubuque musician Brian Bowman as part of its Music at Your Library concert series at 6 p.m. Friday, July 1 in the 3rd floor auditorium. Bowman is a pianist, singer and songwriter influenced by classic jazz and soul. He performs original songs and covers. Doors will open at 5:30 p.m. The event is free. Those 21 and older can bring wine or beer. Music at Your Library is a First Friday's event series that features local and regional musicians. For more information, visit www.carnegiestout.org. Dubuque Council moves forward with Northwest Arterial Housing Project. Story by John Cruz at thmedia.com. Dubuque City Council members on Monday gave unanimous support for a proposed housing development along the Northwest Arterial just 2 weeks after being divided on the project amid nearby resident concerns. Council members voted 7-0 to give final approval to a request to rezone a 4-acre portion of the 80-acre development site located between Northwest Arterial and West 32nd Street from agricultural to multifamily residential. Council members also set a new public hearing on July 5th to request to rezone the remainder of the property from agricultural to single-family residential, with the condition that a traffic study of the development be completed. The unanimous votes came after multiple council members at their last meeting expressed concerns about the development after hearing from neighbors of the proposed project concerned about potential negative traffic impacts. At that meeting, council members voted 4-2 to require the traffic study in order for the single-family residential zoning request to be approved. At Monday's meeting, however, city council members expressed their support for the proposal by developer Switch Homes to construct 105 single-family dwellings and 2 multi-residential structures. The homes planned for the development will range in size from 925 to 1,830 square feet. The homes will use LED lighting and materials made from recycled content, come pre-wired for an electric vehicle charging station, and be pre-engineered for solar panel installations. Council member Rick Jones, who was not at the previous city council meeting, said he believes the city council made a mistake in delaying approval of this rezoning request. I kind of thought you guys ran this into the ditch last week, with all due respect, Jones said. We don't want to be a barrier to development. Council member Katie Wethel, who previously expressed concerns about the multifamily residential rezoning request, said she had reconsidered her hesitation and expressed her desire to support the project. This is a time and a place for concerns of specific development details, she said. I am in favor of whatever it takes to move this forward swiftly. Council member David Resnick, however, said he appreciated the council's previous apprehension about signing off on the rezoning request and the public concerns. We are the elected representatives that citizens can come to when they have reasonable requests, he said. It's really important for us to not forget the citizens of Dubuque and these concerns. Eric Lucy, who lives near the proposed development site, urged council members during the meeting to continue working to address residents' concerns. We do need housing, Lucy said. Let's just not be so desperate because of the times that we're in that we do the minimum. Authorities, parents charged after unresponsive Dubuque toddler tested positive for drug exposure. Authorities said the parents of a Dubuque toddler found unresponsive in her crib faced charges after the seriously injured 2-year-old tested positive for exposure to drugs. Antonio J. Kitch, 28, and Amanda L. Draves, 32, both of 720 East 22nd Street, were arrested at 5:10 a.m. Monday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on charges of child endangerment. Court documents state that Kitch and Draves took a 2-year-old girl to the Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center on May 20th. A search warrant application states that Draves told doctors she laid the child down to sleep at 7:30 p.m. on May 20th. When she came back to check on the child approximately 10 to 15 minutes later, Draves found the child unresponsive and not breathing. Doctors at Mercy One noticed bruising around the child's eye, bleeding from the left ear, and signs of malnourishment. A scan indicated bleeding in the brain, and the child was airlifted to University of Iowa hospitals and clinics for treatment of life-threatening injuries, documents state. Tests of the child's hair in Iowa City indicated exposure to cocaine, methamphetamine, marijuana, and alcohol, according to documents. Graves cooperated with an Iowa Department of Human Services request for a sample of her hair. The test showed positive results for cocaine exposure, documents state. Kitch refused to voluntarily provide a hair sample and was served a search warrant to obtain one. His hair sample tested positive for methamphetamine, cocaine, and marijuana. Graves admitted to using cocaine one time about 2 years ago, but denied using meth or marijuana, documents state. Draves also told police that Kitch smoked marijuana in their bedroom the day they took the toddler to the hospital. Police, intoxicated driver, hurt in 2-vehicle crash in Dubuque. Police said an intoxicated driver was injured Sunday when his vehicle rolled into the back of a vehicle parked in a Dubuque alley. Robertus Williams, Jr., 58, of Dubuque, was transported by ambulance to Unity Point Finley Hospital for treatment of his injuries, according to Dubuque Police. Police said Williams was unconscious at 8:04 p.m. when his northbound vehicle rolled into a vehicle parked in the alley east of the 1800 block of Jackson Street. Williams was arrested on a charge of operating while intoxicated and cited with no proof of financial liability and failure to maintain control. Dubuque teen charged as adult in arson case. A Dubuque teenager faces an adult charge in relation to an arson fire in May 2021 in Asbury, Iowa. Annalise M. Flogel, 17, of 320 Hill Street, number 2, was arrested at 7:46 a.m. Wednesday on a failure to appear warrant related to a charge of second-degree arson. Asbury Police Chief Tom Hannesbury said Flogel was originally charged as a juvenile in relation to a fire deliberately set at an Asbury residence May 26. Royal W.K. Broman, 28, of Asbury, and Chandler A. Borges, 22, of Apple River, Illinois, previously were sentenced to probation for their roles in the fire, as well as an unrelated flare gun shooting spree in June 2021 in Dubuque. Flogel was charged as a juvenile in the flare gun case. Flogel's case in the arson fire was waived to adult court in an order in April by Associate Juvenile Justice, Juvenile Judge Thomas Straka. Dubuque County supervisors agreed to expand health department, differ on funding. Story by Benjamin Fisher at thmedia.com. Members of the Dubuque County Board of Supervisors said they plan to expand the county health department but have different ideas on how to fund the move. The Dubuque County Board of Health has requested $1.1 million of the county's nearly $19 million from the Federal American Rescue Plan Act to add 3 staff members to the health department and expand its scope. The Board of Health also has asked for $30,000 to develop a strategic plan. During a joint meeting Monday of the Board of Supervisors and Board of Health, Health Board members and infectious disease expert Dr. Hendrik Schultz said an expansion of the department was crucial. We need a team so that we can orchestrate the efforts of stakeholders so everybody does their thing, but is aligned to the goal of community health, he said. We need a team that advocates for the health of all community members, including vulnerable populations. Finally, we need a team that is able to rally the troops and tackle new community health challenges that are not yet on our radar. This cannot be done half-hearted, definitely not half-staffed. The health department currently has 3 full-time staff and is authorized for 4 positions. Supervisor Ann McDonough said expansion of the department was a top priority for her, and Supervisor Jay Wickham voiced general support for the move. Certainly the challenges you have in front of you are challenging and daunting, he said. I'm supportive of the initiatives. Supervisor Holly Potthoff said that he too could support expanding the health department. He said he wouldn't have an issue funding one position with ARPA dollars, and then adding more during the county's regular budget process with grants paying for some of the costs. The Board of Supervisors' consensus on expanding the department gives the Board of Health guidance as members begin interviewing for a full-time department director. Former Executive Director Patrice Lambert, retired December 31, and Interim Executive Director Samantha Clough is leaving her position August 12. Clough said the exact job descriptions of the 3 additional positions were fluid, and developing those would be part of the role of the strategic plan. I think taking a look at what those positions could do to improve the department would be the first step, she said. Schultz said an expanded staff could help the county prepare for a steady rise in obesity and an increasingly elderly population in the county. He said addressing both of those issues is not a task to be left to medical providers. The role of medical treatment is minute, he said. Most of the things we have to do to tackle this problem has to do with activities and guidance in the communities, education, changes, and lifestyle. The proposal to expand the health department is focused on taking a systemic, proactive approach to addressing health issues. Right now, we're targeting different disease states rather than looking holistically at the cause of the disease and how to prevent things at the beginning rather than treating them at the end, said Board of Health member and public health professional Jessica Smith. The future of public health is a blend of private and public functions with reliable, consistent funding for interventions aimed at primary prevention. Board of Health member Tom Beckham presented data showing that Dubuque County was middle of the road among similarly sized counties in terms of health department funding, staffing, and receipt of grants. However, he said the county was far below eastern Iowa's largest counties. Wickham and McDonough both expressed support for using federal ARPA funds for a strategic plan. Where supervisors differed was on how to fund the staffing expansion. McDonough said the supervisors should reserve federal ARPA funds for the proposal. The supervisors plan to hold a work session and potentially make a decision on funding the expansion at their Monday, June 27th meeting. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, June 21, 2022 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Service Information, Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Earl M. Rhodes, Piosta, Iowa. Earl M. Dusty Rhodes, 94, Piosta, Iowa. Passed away peacefully with his wife and daughter by his side Saturday, June 18th, 2022 at Luther Matter. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 22, 2022 at Egelhoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 Kennedy Road, where funeral services will be held Thursday at 10:30 a.m. Interment will follow at Dubuque Memorial Gardens. Dusty was born April 2nd, 1928 in Kent, Ohio, the son of Richard and Rose Drugan Rhodes. He grew up in Pennsylvania until he was 14 and then moved to Ohio, where he graduated from Central High School in Akron, Ohio. He then worked for Armour Meats Company in Akron, Ohio. He worked as a government meat grader for the USDA, including the Dubuque packing plant, retiring in 1984. After that, he worked several different jobs, with one being a courier for Dubuque Bank and Trust. Dusty served in the U.S. Army in Germany during the Korean War for 2 years. On November 9, 1963, he married Shirley Mai, the love of his life, at St. Patrick Church in Dubuque. Together, they had two beautiful daughters. He and Shirley felt blessed and cherished them and their grandchildren. They always enjoyed attending their activities and sporting events. His great-grandchildren also held a very special place in his heart. Dusty loved his family, both in Iowa and Pennsylvania, so he visited them often, incorporating them into their family vacations. Dusty always ate his dessert before his meal, making sure he had enough room for it. He also said, "If you eat dessert first, you are a lover of life." He is survived by his wife, Shirley Rhodes of Piosta, two daughters, Kimberly De La Gardelle of Waterloo, Iowa, and Lynn Terry Buffelli of Holy Cross, Iowa, and five grandchildren. Judd Aaron De La Gardelle of Kansas City, Missouri. Rose De La Gardelle of Waterloo, Iowa. Sam De La Gardelle of Cedar Falls, Iowa. And Dominic Liana Buffelli of Holy Cross, Iowa. And Anthony Buffelli of Holy Cross. And three great-grandchildren, Madeline and Luca Buffelli and Levi De La Gardelle. He was preceded in death by his parents, his brother and sister, and several nieces and nephews. The family would like to thank the countless staff heroes from Luther Manor, as well as Hospice of Dubuque, for taking care of Dusty as though he was their own. Thank you also to Dr. Kirkendale and Nurse Kate for their wonderful care through the years. The family would also like to thank our extended family and friends for all their support. Memorials will be made to Hospice of Dubuque and Luther Manor. To leave an online condolence for the family, please visit www.EagleHoffSiegertCasper.com. Terrence D. Allendorf. Terrence D. Terry Allendorf, 85, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on Saturday, June 18, 2022, at Hawkeye Care Center. A time of sharing will be at 11:30 a.m. Thursday, June 23rd at Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque. Burial will be in the East Dubuque Cemetery. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 11:15 a.m. on Thursday at the funeral home. Terry was born on May 1, 1937 in Dubuque, son of Donald E. and Margaret Heffron Allendorf. He was a graduate of Loras Academy, the class of 1955. Terry was united in marriage to Connie Hill on April 28, 1961, and after their divorce spent over 30 years with his girlfriend, Elaine Lansing. He was formerly employed by Dubuque Packing Company as a successful root peddler and later started his own company, Tri-State Provisions, in Hazel Green, Wisconsin, retiring after many years of hard work and dedication. He also owned Tech Deco and made clocks out of computer parts that he sold at craft fairs throughout the Midwest. He was a Dubuque Fest organizer for several years. Carrie loved building and showing classic cars, Corvettes, Thunderbirds, and his prized Grand Champion Model A. He was a member of the Tri-State Antique Car Club, where he had several lifelong friends. He loved the Thursday night car shows and spending times with his lover, with his love, Elaine. His favorite thing, however, was mall walking with his buddies and meeting his friends at the A&W to, quote, solve the world's problems. Besides his obvious good looks, his humor was sharp, and Dad kept us laughing until the end. He was an amazing, caring father, surviving our three children, Wendy Steve Yonda, East Dubuque, Vicki Todd Kirshner, Allendorf of Dubuque, and Dean Heidi Allendorf of Bettendorf, Iowa. Four grandchildren, Taylor, Jamie, Nick, Allison, and Amanda, Trey, six great-grandchildren, his siblings, Donna, Robert, Waller, Linda, Harry, Molly, John Junk, and Jan David Germain, his former wife, Connie, as well as several nieces and nephews. He was preceded in death by his parents, Donald and Margaret, two grandchildren, Zachary and Terry McPollin, his girlfriend, Elaine Lansing, and brother-in-law, Ted Harry. Terry's children wish to express a special thank you to Terry's sister, Jenny Podge, for her help, love, care, and support, although Dad always said his all four sisters were his favorite. And also a special thanks to Dad's buddies who meant the world to him and held a special place in his life. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.millerfhed.com. Milton C. Towsey, Dateline, Galena, Illinois. Milton C. Towsey, 77, of Galena, died on Wednesday, June 15th, 2022. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday, June 23rd, at Furlong Chapel in Galena, where services will follow. Chuck H. Baxter, Jr. Chuck H. Baxter, Jr., 49, of Dubuque, died on Saturday, June 18th, 2022. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, June 23rd, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, where services will follow. Norman E. Mueller, Dateline, Luana, Iowa. Norman E. Mueller, 92, of Luana, died on Thursday, June 16, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 22nd, at Leonard Grau Funeral Home in Monona, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday, June 23rd, at St. John's Church, Lutheran Church in Luana, where services will follow. Burial will follow in the church cemetery. Audrey A. Lambert, Monticello, Iowa. Audrey Lambert, age 75, died early Sunday morning, June 19, 2022, at Monticello Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, with her family gathered by her side after a battle with dementia. Audrey Ann Huggins was born March 19, 1947, in Monticello. She was the daughter of Donald and Margaret Corcoran Huggins. She graduated from Sacred Heart Catholic School in 1965. She married Michael Lambert on June 7, 1968, at Lake Charles, Louisiana. She continued her education at Capri Beauty School, graduating in 1970. She worked as a dental assistant for Dr. Intelkoffer. She returned to college and received her BA, her RN degree in 1993. From 1976 through 2005, she worked at Monticello Nursing Rehabilitation Center and at St. Luke's Cardiology. She started working for Above and Beyond in 2005 and retired in 2010. Over her professional nursing career, Audrey is very thankful for all the years of employment and touched all the lives of her co-workers, patients, and their families. Surviving is her husband, Michael Sr., four children, Angie Lambert Cox, Mike Jr., Shannon, Joe, Sarah, Tara, Scott, Brighton, 12 grandchildren, Austin, Dylan, Lily, Maggie, Carson, Jordan, Logan, Hine, and great-granddaughter, Navy, Madison, Lauren, Mason, Mazzy, Emma, Aunt Blaine, her sister Sheila, Jerry Prawl, and in-laws Pat, Jenny Lambert, Michelle, Tom Glantz, Patrice, Bill Hosch, Lambert. She was preceded in death by her parents and her in-laws, Laverne and Jackie Lambert. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Ghost Funeral Home, Monticello, where parish vigil service will start at 4 p.m. Visitation will continue on Wednesday morning at the Sacred Heart Catholic Church from 10 to 11, with a Mass for Christian burial at 11. Interment will be in the Sacred Heart Cemetery. Father Paul Baldwin will officiate at the services. By visiting GeshOnline.com. You may share your thoughts, memories, and condolences with Audrey's family and sign the online guest book. Audrey enjoyed the time she spent at the Monticello Golf Club playing couples leagues as well as her bowling leagues. She and Sheila always enjoyed their Monday night outings together. Audrey taught CCD for many years and belonged to the Lady of Fatima Study Club. The family would like to thank all the staff at Monticello Nursing Rehabilitation Center and Above and Beyond Hospice for their wonderful care Audrey received during her time with them. Glenn L. Shaw, Jr., Elizabeth, Illinois. Glenn L. Shaw, Jr., 88, of Elizabeth, died on Friday, June 17, 2022. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. today at Lodge Jones Funeral Home in Elizabeth, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 22nd, at First United Methodist Church in Elizabeth, where services will follow. Sandra Engen, McGregor, Iowa. Sandra Engen, 61, of McGregor, died on Friday, June 17, 2022. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, June 23rd, at Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, where services will follow. Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Monona, is assisting family. Funeral services. Ona Lee J. Everett, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Visitation, 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, June 25th, St. Peter's Church, Temple Hill, followed by burial service in the cemetery. Celebration of Life, 3 to 7 p.m. Saturday, June 25th, Moose Lodge, 1820 West Post Road, Southwest Cedar Rapids. John J. Guild, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Visitation, 1 to 3 p.m. Wednesday, June 22nd. Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Cuba City. Memorial Service, 3 p.m. Wednesday at the funeral home. Ruth D. Harbuck, Delhi, Iowa. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m. Friday, June 24th. St. Paul Lutheran Church, Delaware. Service, 11 a.m. Friday at the church. Jacqueline M. Hempstead, Manchester, Iowa. Celebration of Life, 2 to 3 p.m. Sunday, June 26th. Delhi Methodist Church, Delhi. Thomas J. Hotchberger, Dubuque. Visitation, 10 a.m. to noon today. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory, 3860 Asbury Road. Massive Christian burial, 1 p.m. today, Church of Resurrection. Roger A. Huber, Dubuque. Massive Christian burial, 10 a.m. today, Church of the Nativity. K. E. Canospi, Elkader, Iowa. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. today and 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 21. Leonard Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Elkader. Service, 10 a.m. to Tuesday at the funeral home. Linda A. L. Locke, Monticello, Iowa. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. today, God's Funeral Home. Service, 10 a.m. Tuesday, 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, June 21. St. Matthew Lutheran Church, Monticello. Roger A. Oberfels, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Visitation, 4 to 8 p.m. today, Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Service, 10, 11 a.m. Tuesday, June 21, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church, Dieter J. Osterman, Dubuque. Service, 2 p.m. Saturday, June 25th, University of Dubuque Chapel, 2000 University Avenue. Earl M. Rhodes, Piasta, Iowa. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 22, Hegeloff Secret Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 Kennedy Road. Service, 10:30 a.m. Thursday, June 23rd at the funeral home. Margaret Schroeder, Bellevue, Iowa. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m. today. St. Joseph's Catholic Church, Bellevue. Service, 11 a.m. today at the church. Steve J. Schroeder, Bellevue, Iowa. 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 22nd. Hockman Meyer Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Bellevue. Service, 11 a.m. Thursday, June 23rd. St. Joseph's Catholic Church, Bellevue. Alan Schuster, Platteville, Iowa. Celebration of Life, 3 to 6 p.m. Sunday, June 26, Eagles Club, 5900 Saratoga Road, Asbury, Iowa. Brenda L. Stump, East Dubuque, Illinois. Visitation, 4 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, June 22nd, where our time of sharing will be at 6 p.m. Anna E. Simons, Darlington, Wisconsin. Visitation, 10 to 11 a.m. today with a rosary service at 11 a.m. Holy Rosary Catholic Church service, 11 a.m. today at the church. Looking at some local sports, USHL Fighting Saints open season on 8-game road trip. The Dubuque Fighting Saints will play their first 8 games of the United States Hockey League season away from home before returning to Mystique Community Ice Center, the league announced Monday. Under first-year head coach Kirk McDonald, the Saints will also practice away from home until the completion of a $4.6 million project to remediate the structural settling of the facility, which opened in 2010-2011 on Chaplin Schmidt Island. Dubuque will host its first true home game against the reigning Eastern Conference champion Madison Capitals on Friday, November 4th, just days after the scheduled completion of the project. Regular season concludes April 22nd at Waterloo. Dubuque opens the season at the USHL Fall Classic in suburban Pittsburgh on September 24th against Des Moines and serves as a home team the following day against Omaha. Following the two neutral site games, the Saints will play 30 home games and 30 road games. For the third consecutive season, the USHL will feature a more regionalized schedule, so Dubuque's schedule will primarily feature Eastern Conference rivals. The league went to that model in the first season out of the coronavirus pandemic, out of health and safety concerns, as well as a way to reduce travel expenses at a time when attendance dipped due to the pandemic. Dubuque will play the Cowboy Cup rival Cedar Rapids and Green Bay eight times each, Youngstown, Muskegon, and Des Moines 7 times apiece, and Madison, Chicago, and Waterloo 6 times each. The Saints will face USA Hockey's National Development Team program under 17 squad 4 times and the under 18 squad an additional 2 times. Prep baseball, Western Dubuque halts Hempstead win streak. Mustangs, Forge split. Story by Jim Leitner at thmedia.com. Dateline Farley, Iowa. Tucker Nauman doesn't worry about momentum going against the Western Dubuque baseball team in these days. The Iowa Class 3A, number 3 ranked Bobcats, answered both of Dubuque Hempstead's big innings with crooked numbers of their own and a 17-7 6-inning win in the first game of the Missouri Valence doubleheader Monday night. That stopped the Mustangs' 11-game winning streak, but Hempstead rebounded to take the nightcap 5-3. Prep baseball notebook. Cascade returns to home away from home tonight. In an nod to its past, Iowa Class 2A, number 3 ranked Cascade baseball team will host Bellevue in a River Valley Conference game this afternoon at the ballpark in Bernard. Varsity game will start at 4:30 p.m. as Bernard doesn't have lights. The Cougars play in one of the state's nicest facilities at the American Legion Ballpark in Cascade, but Coach Roman Hummel came up with the idea of playing a few miles down the road at Bernard for a nostalgic twist to the schedule. The high school used to play games down there all the time back in the day because most of the starters were from there, Hummel said. They haven't done it since early 1980s, but I thought it'd be pretty cool to go back down there and play. It's neat to be able to do things like that every once in a while. Cascade's last home games in Bernard came on July 8, 1983, when the Cougars swept a doubleheader over Northeast Goose Lake. Those Cascade teams featured current Creighton University basketball coach Greg McDermott, Mark Pat Weber, Mark Simon, Jerry Malloy, and Steve Callahan. Western Dubuque leapfrog Mississippi Valley Conference rival Dubuque Wallert into the number 3 spot in the Iowa High School Association Baseball Coaches Association Class 3A poll on Monday. The Bobcats 21-4 were unranked in the preseason and sat at number 5 last week. In auto racing, Merfield back in victory lane at Dubuque. Luke Merfield became the first IMCA late model driver to win multiple feature races at Dubuque Speedway on Sunday night. The Dubuque driver, who won the May 8th season opener, held off Bryce Garnard of Lanark, Illinois, in the 25-lap main event. 4 other drivers have won features at Dubuque this season. Eric Pollard of Piasta, Iowa, Ron Klein of Sherrill, Iowa, and Gage Neal of Ely, Iowa, rounded out the top 5. Here are some letters to the editors. Letter, news article should be specific about Canadian provinces. This is from Wayne Collins of Moundview Road in Dubuque. An Associated Press story on hepatitis on page 14A of the June 1 Telegraph Herald refers to Minnesota, California, and Canada. The first two are states, the last one is a country, not the same category. We see this mistake all too often in the media. When writing about U.S. states, you should say which province is Canada. or Mexico. It's one small way to educate Americans who are woefully ignorant of the geography of this hemisphere. Reader, Ryan took too long to admit his mistake. By Scott Reeder for the Telegraph Herald. Jim Ryan was a tough-as-nails prosecutor who rose to become a two-term Illinois Attorney General. Despite his success at the ballot box, he was not a natural politician. He hated the glan-handing part of retail politics. When reporters interviewed him, he was often stiff and uncomfortable. But more significantly, Ryan suffered from the hubris of not wanting to make a mistake. His life was filled with so much woe that shortly after his June 12th death, his own family issued a press release comparing him to the biblical character Job. He lost a 12-year-old daughter, Anne, to an undiagnosed brain tumor in 1997. His 24-year-old son, Patrick, killed himself in 2007. His wife suffered from heart disease, and Ryan himself battled multiple bouts of type 2 Hodgkin's lymphoma. From the time I met him until his death, Jimmy was always striving to do the right thing and help people. His wife, 54 years old, Marie said in a prepared statement, that was who he was, and he was very successful at it. When I read those words, I just cringe. He didn't always strive to do the right thing. The Jim Ryan I knew sent two innocent men to death row. And even when evidence began piling up that a mistake had been made, he just ignored it. The men's name were Rolando Cruz and Alejandro Hernandez. They were convicted in the 1983 abduction and killing of 10-year-old Janine Nicarico. The two men were ultimately convicted and sentenced to death, but after several appeals and two retrials each, both were exonerated and another man ultimately was convicted of the girl's slaying. John Hanlon, a Springfield lawyer, represented Cruz and Hernandez, recalls traveling to Wheaton to meet with Ryan in 1995. I thought there was evidence that the two were wrongly convicted. I suggested they were trying to do this new thing called DNA testing to see if it would match to the crime, but he wasn't interested and he refused to go along with it. If he had agreed to it, the case would have been resolved years earlier than it ultimately was. That wasn't the action of someone driven by a desire for truth or justice, nor was it, as his widow claims, a desire to do the right thing. He was blinded by the arrogance of power. It was the biggest case of a career, and he protected that conviction. He used it as a foundation to build a political career. As he sought higher office, two innocent men languished on death row for the crime they had nothing to do with. I last spoke to Ryan in 2002 when he dropped by my office to chat and discuss his run for governor. Even then, he was unwilling to admit he made a mistake. And after more than a dozen men on Illinois death row had been found to have been factually innocent, he still clung to the idea that society should be able to kill its own citizens. That arrogance of not admitting a mistake might well have cost him a chance to be governor. In 2002, he was the net Republican nominee for governor facing Rod Blagojevich. Chicago Tribune relentlessly criticized Ryan's handling of the Nicarico case. That means, they said, being governor is all about judgment, lawyer Hanlon said. And if his judgment was this poor in the biggest case of his career, how good would it be as governor? Ultimately, Blagojevich won the race, but his judgment didn't prove too great either. Suffering is the mother of empathy. In the years following his return to the political wilderness, I often wondered about Ryan. Did he reflect on his mistakes and rethink his own political positions in the wake of his son's death and his own declining health? There is reason to think so. In 2010, he made another successful bid for governor, but he failed to capture the Republican nomination. For the first time, he apologized for his role in the wrongful prosecutions. He said he acted in good faith and still came up with the wrong result. He added, the system and I failed to achieve a just outcome. I doubt those words provided much solace to either Cruz or Hernandez after spending years on death row. But at least he said them. His spirit of defense of capital punishment dims over the years as well. Ultimately, he said he had grave concerns about the institution. If even as hard as nails prosecutor can change his name, perhaps there is hope for us all. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Tuesday, June 21, 2022. I'm your reader, Bill Petrosky. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.